I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. TMZ, the celebrity gossip site, posted the infamous video of Ravens running back Ray Rice's assault on his future wife in an Atlantic City elevator. That led to Rice's indefinite suspension and a storm of news related to the National Football League, the Ravens, and domestic violence. Baltimore Sun media critic David Zerowick talks about TMZ and its Ray Rice scoop and the site's evolution, or not, as a source of news of consequence. The NFL's much-criticized handling of the Rice case doesn't seem to have affected the ratings of Sunday, Monday, or Thursday night football. We'll talk about that, the fall television season, and a controversy involving a New York Times critic. Midday on Media with David Zerowick after the news. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. In the second hour of our show today, we're going to have a conversation with best-selling author Andrew Carroll, who's a historian, a history buff, best known for creating the Legacy Project, which you might have heard about. It was a collection of wartime correspondence, war letters. It became a PBS documentary. He's got a book out now that's really great. It's called Here Is Where, Discovering America's Great Forgotten History. Andrew Carroll was inspired to write this book after visiting the spot where Abraham Lincoln's son was saved by the brother of Abraham Lincoln's assassin. There's a story in that, of course. But Andrew Carroll wondered after scoping out that story, how many other unmarked places are there where intriguing events have unfolded and that we walk past every day not realizing their significance? So he went on a cross-country trek, an odyssey, to visit some lesser-known sites of forgotten history, including some right here in Baltimore. And we'll have Andrew Carroll for you in the second hour of our show today for Here Is Where. It really ought to be good. So please stay tuned for that. And this hour ought to be great, too. David Zerowick is back with us, a Baltimore Sun media critic, my colleague from Calvert Street. Nice to see you again, David.
Happy to be back, Dan.
We're going to start off by talking about TMZ, as I said in the intro. TMZ is known as, the celebrity gossip site, publishing paparazzi photos, fueling the romance rumor mills in Hollywood. But, you know, it broke a big story. It's broken some very big stories. Of course, most recently, the Ray Rice. Well, it didn't break the story. They published the video, the course that everybody knows about now, of Ravens running back Ray Rice assaulting his then-fiancée, now-wife, in an Atlantic City elevator. And that's led to this a major storm of news related to the NFL, the Ravens, and domestic violence. Before that, the racist remarks from Donald Sterling's phone conversation, the owner of the former owner now of the L.A. Clippers, the Monty Teo girlfriend hoax for the Notre Dame player, the Tiger Woods extramarital affairs. So TMZ is, yeah, they publish videos, but they've also broken some big stories on their website and on their TV show.
Yeah, you know, in addition to the list, all this you named, Michael Richards from Seinfeld, racist rant in the nightclub, they had that. Mel Gibson's anti-Semitic stuff, they were the ones who broke that. You know, it's fascinating. TMZ has become kind of a litmus test on some of this stuff, because everybody, Dan, says, oh, it's a new world. We're in this revolution in media, new technology, lifestyle, economics, all these forces. But yet people want to still operate by the old principles, or at least go to the old principles, and they go, well, TMZ can't be taken serious. They pay for video, you know. That's against the rules, so they're not a real outlet, you know. I wrote a column, said 5 years ago, I bought that. I mean, I bought totally in. And now my views have evolved, as President Obama says on his views off, and they've evolved to a new position where I really think we have to admit TMZ, especially in sports. And last year, they actually set up a companion site called TMZ Sports,
yeah,
where they broke the Donald Sterling stuff and where they published the Ray Rice video. And I think part of it, I've talked to folks there, part of it is that sports reporting is so bad in some ways. It's so much either the publication or the outlet or the channel or the network is so linked to the league through a contract where they make, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars broadcasting stuff, or it's a kind of journalism where oftentimes the reporters really bow down to the team and the coaches in a way that would be offensive to us if our city hall reporters, you know, the good police reporters are always fighting with the police commissioner for more access on behalf of the people. It's like when they give you the beat, don't hire somebody who's not going to butt heads with the, and by the way, police are pretty powerful and they're pretty intimidating. So you got to be tough to cover. Just city hall, your career. You know, I mean, I saw
a comment on Facebook about one of the Baltimore Sun sports columnists and how he's not welcome over at the castle with the Ravens.
Too bad.
No,
I
think somebody was saying this as a point of criticism of the writer, and I don't see it. I don't see it that way.
It's a badge of honor. I'm happy to see it. You know, I'll tell you what. Yesterday, I came into my office, and I can't say the person's name because, you know, we agreed that the conversation would be off the record. But, you know, I picked up, the phone rang, I picked it up, I didn't even look at it, you know, I just sat down. It was a really big guy in the broadcasting industry who wanted to give me an earful about something I wrote, you know? And I, you know, by the end of it, you know, we were okay, we're fine, we'll move on. But that's part of
it. So somebody you cover.
Yeah, somebody, I wrote something about somebody, something this guy's in charge of. And that's part of the beat. I mean, my God. And, you know, but I have, you know, I don't want John Harbaugh glaring at me when I come over to cover practice, you know.
What are you saying with regard to what TMZ did in the midst of all this?
TMZ, this is the thing about TMZ that's interesting. TMZ is an outsider. That's one of the reasons I think they're so successful. Now, a lot of people are trying to say TMZ, because it's tabloid, can do things we can't do, like pay for video. You know what? That is so false. Everybody pays for video in one way or another today. I mean, what about if you have a relationship, a business partnership with a TV station and you get video for them? You know, well, that's payment. What about if somebody comes in with video? You know, when my first job, I think I told this, I did an investigation in Milwaukee, and the Milwaukee Sentinel took the investigation. I applied for a job, took the investigation, was going to run it with their investigative reporter's byline on it, and eventually, their form of payment was to give me freelance work and then give me a full-time job. Well, that was a pretty good deal at long term.
Yeah.
I wasn't happy when I found out they were going to run it with his byline. Funny thing is, the guy called me to check a fact, and I called the managing editor, who was a tough guy. I said, you can't run this. So he gave me a byline. I got the second byline.
Oh, you got a byline.
Anyway. But it's a form of payment.
But what about paying for the ethic of that? Let's talk about that for a little bit. If someone takes a photograph of a great fire someplace and before the Baltimore Sun photographer can get there.
Exactly.
Or before Channel 11 videographer can get there.
Exactly. And
you know, this is a commercial enterprise. The Sun is at WBAL TV, or any of the TV stations are, except for public television, right?
Yes.
So it computes in somebody's head. I have this video or this photograph that this commercial entity wants to disseminate, right?
Yes.
And they hope to get ratings from that, or they hope to get eyes on their website with that. Why shouldn't I be compensated?
You should be compensated. And into culture today, Dan, where people read about some guy took a picture and he got $500,000. That nobody's going to walk through your door that doesn't expect to be compensated anymore. So you have to compensate them. But you can't take an old rule that says we should never pay for it.
So if you stick by the old rule,
that means
TMZ gets all this stuff. That explains why they do.
I think
it doesn't mean they work harder at getting the material. Right?
I think they do, actually. And I think they have an edge.
You think they work harder at getting the video, say, in the Ray Rice case, than other news entities did?
Dan, if I walk in the New York Times or the Washington Post
or Baltimore Sun,
and I've got I've got the Ray Rice video, you bet they're going to pay me for it. And I'll guarantee you they will. They'll find a way to do it. Now, you know what? At the networks, they call it a licensing fee. ABC, NBC, CBS News, all of them, CNN, they have all been paying for it for the last 20 years. And the licensing fees, you know, in the Casey Anthony case, a guy took a picture. The guy who found the body of her son, by the way, she was, acquitted on all the major charges.
Right.
So
I get them mixed up in my head, but she was acquitted. Yeah.
But a guy took a picture. The guy who found the body of her son, they wanted to interview him. ABC paid that guy something like $20,000 for the picture of a snake that was in her backyard. Well, they didn't want the snake. They wanted the right to interview him exclusively. But that's how they called it. They said they paid a licensing fee for this picture. They've been doing it forever. You know what? There is, and here's the other thing. Legacy media like us, you can't say, oh, everything's changing, but we're not going to change the rules. We're not going to rethink the rules. Everything should be on the table. Here's what matters, Dan. If you pay for a picture is not the problem. The problem is if you don't vet and corroborate and authenticate that picture before you do it. Right. That's where you
That's more important, actually, isn't it? Because I'm wondering about the ethic of paying. This makes me think about something because I'm part of that legacy too.
I was always told,
well, we don't pay for stories, we don't pay for photographs. I don't know about photographs. I never dealt with.
No, that's what they say. That's what And 5 years.
We just wanted people to volunteer this, and they'd be happy to be published in the Sun and get a credit for it.
Yep.
Or listen, let's listen to an exchange on this. This is Harvey Levin. Now he's the guy that runs TMZ,
right?
Here is his exchange with Jake Tapper on CNN on this very question of paying for video.
First of all, I don't want to take away from your scoops. Obviously, this was a very important one, and we're not here to have a debate on the ethics of paying for content. But TMZ does pay for content as a policy. Why do you think the tape only came out now, a week after the casino closed?
Well, I will say, so does CNN pay for content. Every news operation in America pays for content when we're talking about video, because A, there's nothing wrong with it, and B, you guys do it too. If you guys get a fire that some stringer shot, you guys buy it. I mean, I know that, you know that, and you know everybody else buys it too. So that said, in terms of why it came out, I think what happened was the casino closed, and when the casino closed, I think there were a lot of employees who just said, you know what, we want to do the right thing. And ultimately, we ended up getting this video because when you look at the video, clearly you see the NFL did not do the right thing. And I think at a point, somebody said that the gain here is worse than the risk in terms of doing what's right.
Doing what's right. Okay.
Getting the video out. Yeah.
Right. TMZ's motives, does it matter what their motives are? What their motives are, how are their motives any different than our motives?
They're not. I mean, in a way, they're not. Now, Harvey Levin is a kind of pugnacious, unpleasant guy to a lot of people. But you know what? And he claims to me, you know, he says, Zerwick, you guys are a bunch of hypocrites, you know? Well, see, Harvey, there's a way to have that conversation without insulting me, you know? But I can see why he's mad about the hypocrisy of the legacy media. We act this way. Dan, that was the first line of my sentence. 5 years ago, this was all simple to me. They paid for it, therefore they were outside the realm of respectable journalism. End of story. I don't have to think about it anymore. It fits the model in my head.
Right.
But it's not true. If they do not publish, however they got it, if they do not publish that video, Ray Rice is playing for the Baltimore Ravens. All this stuff about what stuff about what a great guy he is and what a role model goes on and on and on, and another woman is battered. Mm-hmm. Not just battered, I mean violently abused. And we don't even know what the word means because Christine Brennan from USA Today says, we put the word domestic in front of the violence, and it softens the violence somehow. It sounds less ugly. But when you see it, TMZ did that to us. It shoved America's face, said, here's your hero, guys. What's he look like now?
We also wouldn't have the scrutiny that the NFL commissioner has come under and the Ravens have come under since that video came out. I'm with you on that. I think most people would agree that if it hadn't been for that second video. But then this raises this question for me, and I wrote about this in one of my columns on this. It's like, is this the new standard? We're going to have verification, affirmation, confirmation from a video before we go forward, before we actually believe allegations now?
Well, you know, I have a hypothesis. As you may know, I have a hypothesis on everything because I'm a crackpot. No, but I have a hypothesis on that too, a belief. And here it is. I think that the conversation of democracy, especially in the media, has become so polarized and so much about one side saying the other side's a bunch of liars. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this, I will say, has been driven by Fox and Roger Ailes saying everything's liberal, blah, blah, blah. But in fairness to them, they had a feeling that the media was overwhelmingly liberal, and they were trying to balance it. So they didn't see themselves as doing it just to discredit the media, but to discredit part of it that they thought was ideological, but people wouldn't admit it. And I think our words have become so ideologically polarized, Dan, but also phony in a way. You know, with people like Anthony Weiner talking on television, you know, and people who are good at it, members of Congress on either side, who are good at speaking, but what they're doing is pure propaganda talk, you know? And we sometimes maybe can't cut through all of it, but we know we trust none of it anymore. Doesn't matter.
A police report that says rendered her unconscious, those words.
Not enough.
That's not enough.
The only thing we can now believe, I think, is what we see with our own eyes. And, of course, we don't discuss all the ways an image can be manipulated. But, honestly, Dan, I think we've come to that. We have so reached a point in our culture where we don't believe anyone's words anymore on almost any subject. We've so debased the word. And what it is, it's really Washington speak. They know how to use high-sounding language. You know what I'm saying? You know,
you might be onto something here about rhetoric.
Yes, rhetoric today.
And even in a police report, like,
yes.
A lot of people have problems believing the police today,
yes,
right? No
yes.
matter what police department you're
exactly.
talking about, there's all these questions about it.
You're
how
so
they behave,
right.
how they treat people, and what they state. So you're. And,
I didn't
and,
even think of that.
Well,
you're right. Good
and you
point.
Have jury nullification that yes. goes on, too. There's a disbelieving, distrusting public. So you think maybe that's at the root of that? So we need. We need to wait for the video. We need to wait for the DNA evidence.
I think that's absolutely true, and we don't. And
part of it has to do with technology. Right?
Part of it has to do with technology. Yeah. Yes, but a real part of it is this notion of people attacking people, both debasing the language by knowing how to use it, and then using it for dishonest discourse, which is really propaganda in a way, is what this is a form of really dishonest discourse.
Well, bring it back to the Ray Rice case then. Those words from the police report in February that I guess most of us didn't appreciate
until
the video.
Well, we've also become so enmeshed, and this is part of it, in sort of the politics of identity and people sometimes misusing that. You could, you know, I'm sure some people could say, oh, well, I don't know what policeman wrote that, but maybe it's intended to make this man look bad
right.
because
it was a police officer's opinion, not really a fact.
And
right?
he may have had
an
a racial or an ethnic bias
right,
against
right.
Ray Rice,
right,
you
right,
know?
Right. Interesting.
And, and you know, and people do that all the time. People on all different sides of the thing, you know, say that about different groups and different things. Honestly, the power of the word has become so debased in this culture that the image, fortunately for TMZ, they're in the business of getting these images,
right.
you know?
David Zerwick, our guest in this hour of Midday, Midday on Media. We can take some phone calls. If you'd like to talk about this, please join us, 410-662-8780. Our toll-free long-distance number, 866-661-9309. And the Midday email address is midday@wypr.org. When we get back, we'll take a look at the NFL and the football ratings, the telecast ratings. They don't seem to be hurt by the Ray Rice scandal and the what some people are calling the worst public relations week in NFL history. Also, the fall television season, we got to talk about that, David. And yes, a New York Times critic sending off folks into the viral internet because of something she wrote the other day. We'll get back to all of this in just a few minutes. Welcome back to Midday, Midday on Media, our monthly visit with David Zerwick, the Baltimore Sun media critic and the Zeon TV blogger. So people are still watching lots of pro football Monday night, Thursday night.
Yeah, you know, Sunday, Thursday, and Monday. We now have three primetime nights of professional football. CBS added the Thursday night this season. It was the most sought-after ad time you could get in the upfront sales. CBS sold it, Dan, at $100,000 per 30-second spot.
Wow.
And was sold out for the Ravens-Steelers game on September 11th. Astonishing. That telecast drew 20.8 million viewers, making it the second highest rated telecast of the week behind NBC Sunday Night Football, which has been on for 5 years.
Sunday's NBC broadcast of the Steelers-Panthers game earned a rating of 7.2 in the 18 to 49 demo. Is
yeah,
that the one
does
that
well in it does well with the key young yeah. demographic as well as the huge overall audience. No primetime show. None of the shows, all you know, they're rolling out 25 new series on the network starting this week. Those shows won't even come close. They won't. Most of those won't. Most of those will be gone by December. But most of them won't do half of what football will do. And when you look at the top 10 for the year, I guarantee you Sunday Night Football will probably be number one. And CBS's Thursday Night Football, I predicted it was going to be number two. Monday Night Football will not be that high because it's on cable and it's a smaller universe. But CBS, this was really interesting. Week two, they had a terrible game. It was 56-14. I can't remember who the
blowout. Oh, I forget. Yeah, it was one of those blowouts.
And
there were a couple.
Yeah. Yeah, and that game still drew 12 million. It only drew 12 million. So if they don't get good games, they don't get. But even a bad game, a blowout, gets you 12 million viewers, which is, you know, is more than about anything but the top 10 shows will get. So yeah, football dominates. And you know what the really sad thing, or depending on your point of view, it might be a wonderful thing, but when you look at the top 10 shows, it's not just the games. The pregame shows and the postgame shows are in the top 10 among a top or any drama or sitcom.
So Ray Rice, Roger Goodell's handling of the Ray Rice situation, his couple of public apologies, press conferences, ESPN report, Steve Bisciotti press conference the other day here in Baltimore, all of this making national news, all of it, you know, not making the league look so good, especially the commissioner, has no effect.
Dan, I think it's too early to say it has no effect. And I really believe this. I really believe, we've already seen Procter & Gamble. I really believe that sponsors will pull out if they find out that there was a cover-up, either at the NFL or at the Baltimore Ravens.
I mean, basically, if the ESPN story holds up.
Yes, if it holds up.
They knew about the second video from day one.
Yes, and now that both parties are essentially lying about it. If any part of that holds up, and hey, the two guys who did it are pretty good reporters, so, but, you know, let's not prejudge. Let's see what happens. But if any of that holds up, I think you're going to see more advertisers withdraw, which then will really rattle the billionaires who own these teams, and it's going to rattle the NFL, and they're going to have to give them the head of Goodell, finally. But it's also going to hurt these franchises. I think, personally, I'll tell you something. This is really true. I like baseball a lot more than football. I'm an addict for TV baseball, but I like football, and I've really gotten involved in, because I have to write about it, but I also got involved in watching Ravens. There was a pleasure in watching it. If I wasn't writing about it, if I was off, I'd still watch them. I have, you know, and I've been involved in athletics, so I went to school on a baseball scholarship, so I love athletics at the college. What's happened so far has changed my attitude towards professional football in a way I didn't think was possible. I am really disgusted by the way they tried to protect Ray Rice. There's no doubt in my mind. And how little they cared about the issue. They appear to have cared about the issue of women being brutalized this way. You know? That to me says how, I mean, there's now a cognitive dissonance. I want to sit down and enjoy the game, but I say, how can I support these guys who feel that way about victims in our society, who really appear not to care?
And then last week you had the Adrian Peterson matter and the Vikings ready to play him and then, of course, changing their minds and apologizing, saying they got it wrong.
Yeah.
They can't seem to get that right from the outset, a man accused of child abuse.
I'll tell you, Dan, I totally believe that this can become a real a real sort of primal almost confrontation. And I don't know if people will take it out in the open, but they might just do it privately and turn away from the league in this sense. The NFL, if anything, is about masculinity. And I believe that as the women's movement of the 60s and 70s, as it filtered through the culture, you know, it wasn't until the 90s that we started to get TV shows with women in the hero roles. That's how long it takes before our popular culture catches up with this stuff. But now it's in the culture, and you have generations of women who are also teaching these values in the homes to their daughters. I think as that happened, I think a sort of quarrel, maybe an unintended consequence, maybe a fully intended consequence, I don't know. But men's notion of what it meant to be masculine came under review, and I think a lot of men were uncertain about it. And the NFL, I think this is one of the reasons the NFL has been so incredibly popular the last decade or so, offers a version of masculinity for men that says this is what it means to be a man. And it incorporates a lot of traditional things that might not be so good about violence and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it channels it in a way that it's okay. And it's tribal, but it's male tribal, you know, with your team. And I think that this could become a focal point when that version of masculinity allows for women to be violently brutalized, then it's a problem. And then I think women in leadership positions are going to say, no, the NFL, no. It's teaching a version of masculinity to millions of males every week. We need to deal with it. We need to deconstruct the masculinity behind the NFL. I think that then you're going to have a real culture war, or a gender war, I should say.
I'm glad to hear you express some of these things, because they're hard to express, this growing ambivalence about football, or feeling conflicted about professional football because of what's happened. If you were predisposed because of the problems with concussions that we've been reading more about.
Thank you. Yes, I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
The name of the Washington football franchise, where the league doesn't really put any pressure on that owner down there to change that name, if that troubles you. The bounty gate, the bounty scandal at the New Orleans Saints a couple of years ago. All those things could bother you if you're thinking about things and how you spend your time and your money. Is part of it, you know, by watching, you're supporting, by buying, obviously by buying apparel and gear and things,
totally.
You're supporting it.
Yeah,
right?
You know, if you
patronizing
bought,
sponsors.
Think if you're a dad, you bought your kid the Ray Rice jersey, and you took the kid to the ballpark, and you said, see, Ray Rice, he's a little guy, he overachieved, he made up for it. You're a little guy. When you go out there and play, I want you to believe you can play with the big guys. Yeah. Let Ray be your role model. Well, if I'm the mom in that family, after I see that video, I go, hey, Dad, come on, let's go have a talk. Now, go talk to your son. Right. Tell him we're going to burn the jersey, number one, and he's not going to be Ray Rice anymore. You've been teaching him that. Oh, and USA Cable TV's been telling you Ray's a great role model against anti-bullying. And every media outlet in Baltimore has been telling you what a great role model is Ray and what a great guy Ray is and blah, blah, blah. Even though last year he had a different story every week for why he wasn't playing well, blah, 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 we still said, oh, he's a great role model. Dad, you need to talk to that kid. I don't want our son thinking that's a role model. Because in the kid's mind, what happened in that elevator is then okay, and it's not okay.
I'm almost reluctant to change the subject back to actually television. That's your thing, David. David Zerwick, media critic of The Sun. Thank you very much for that. I'm going to try to segue here because this is the point in the show where I usually set you off.
We're not going to do it today.
Oh,
right?
No. I have the thing to do it. But it relates to football, but it relates to television, the actual telecast of the game.
Oh, okay, as opposed to sociology.
Yeah.
You know, I was once on with an executive from NBC, a woman, and I said, I'm not a sociologist. And I was ripping up.
But you play one on television?
I was ripping up her shows on sociological reasons, Browns. And she said, oh, but you want to be one.
Well, let me try this one on, because we got just a couple minutes before the next break. And I do want to talk about the angry black woman story that went viral
sure,
the other
sure
day.
Make sure the listeners know that's in quotes from somebody else.
It's very
else.
Much in quotes. This article about Shonda Rhimes, the TV producer, creator of TV shows. and the criticism of her in the New York Times that went viral in the last week, just the last few days.
With good
reason. But first, let me ask you about this. CBS's handling of the Ravens game this past Sunday, the Ravens-Browns game, where you had, you said, fourth-rate coverage by the fourth-rate...
Fourth-string team.
No sideline reporter after Dennis Pitta was removed for his injury. And that was... I read your piece, and that was classic fun David Zerowick ranting away towards CBS. But you really do, for a prized franchise, a valuable franchise, the Ravens, which gets pretty good ratings.
Yes.
Here, but when they're on national TV. Right. Pretty poor performance by CBS, David.
I think it was. You know, and I praised them. On a Thursday night
game. Please don't hold back just because you're on radio.
No, you know, I praised them on a Thursday night game. So I don't want people to think that... you know, that Zerowick just criticized anything with CBS Sports and football. Although last year, anything with with Dan Dierdorf, I seem to have said. CBS called up once and said, Zerowick, you wrote about a baseball game and you somehow managed to mention Dan Dierdorf and how much you don't like him. Do you think that might be out of bounds? Can we reconsider your crusade? But here's the thing. You know, really, CBS did. You know, last year I spent all year complaining about no sideline reporters. They added sideline reporters this year. I'm not saying they did it because of me, but they did. To some extent.
But not with the fourth.
But
string.
Not at our level. Yeah. Not at our market size. Yeah. Based on a conversation I had yesterday with.
How much can that cost them?
Exactly. That's what I said.
I mean, you've had a stringer.
Yes.
If you had a college intern just to get you some good information,
exactly.
Right? What happened to Dennis Pitta?
Hire a retired sports writer from the
Sun. Yeah,
for
we
God's
got a few of those.
You know what I'm saying?
Someone who took a buyout.
Yes. You know, honest to God, but I'll tell you what. So I was really mad because when Pitta went down, you know, your heart's in you can't swallow because of the history of it, and you're so upset, and you desperately want information.
Because it might be a career-ending injury.
Yeah, it could be, and it's so sad in a way to see a guy rehab as hard as he did. It's not just that you want your team to win. At a personal level, you're really distraught to see this happen. So you want information desperately, and you got two guys sitting in a booth, and one guy saying, well, we don't want to speculate, and then, of course, all he can do is speculate because he got no real information. Right. So on Twitter, meanwhile, you know, the Sun sports writers and the guys who are covering it in Cleveland are tweeting out some real information. Oh, you know, this is the right hip. It's the same hip he injured and fractured and dislocated. He's now on his way to a hospital. Here's the name of the hospital. Real facts that actually give you a better sense of it. So anyway, based on a conversation I had off the record yesterday, I believe that we're going to be seeing, we may well be seeing reporters, sideline reporters on our telecasts here.
Okay.
And it may not be full-time network employees. It may be people, just as you said, Dan, it may be people hired who are here who are good enough for a network to think they can do it.
Yeah. David Zerowick with us for the remainder of the hour. You can join our conversation if you want to talk about television, 410-662-8780. We're going to take another break here, David. When we get back, we'll talk about that New York Times article about Shonda Rhimes that went viral, and also a little bit on the fall television season.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about this role Jada Pinkett Smith has in Gotham.
Yes, very good.
A new series that's out now. So a short break. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Midday on Media. Dan Roderick's here with my colleague from The Sun, the media critic of The Sun, David Zerowick. Now, Alessandra Stanley is television critic for The New York Times.
Yep.
She wrote an article about Shonda Rhimes, creator of Grey's Anatomy, Private Practice, and Scandal. Those are all been popular shows, successful programs, I think. The article went viral because she referred to her The critic referred to Shonda Rhimes as an angry black woman. Let me see how she put it here.
I think it's in the lead of her
it's
piece.
In the lead of the piece. I get all my papers flopped around here. Excuse me a minute. What I have is Margaret Sullivan, the ombudsman of the Times, sort of an issuing apology. But going back to September 18th, the article's headline is Rot in Rhimes' Image. Viola Davis plays Shonda Rhimes' latest tough heroine with the lead, When Shonda Rhimes writes her autobiography, it should be called How to Get Away with Being an Angry Black Woman.
Yeah, because the name of the show she's writing about, the new show that premieres tomorrow night, is How to Get Away with Murder. So she's trying to play off of that.
Okay. So everybody got upset about this. And actually, the writer, Alessandra Stanley, was not helped much by her own doing or her own hand here. She made a couple of factual errors in this story, in this review, and she's made some errors in the past in articles for the New York Times.
I will tell you what, a couple things, Dan, and this is, you know, I need to preface this. I go out of my way, and honestly, you know, there's no, I have no shortage of enemies, either people I cover or people who do what I do. I mean, honestly, I'm at a point in my career where if I'm not speaking on behalf of the audience, what am I doing in this business? You know, so I don't care anymore. But I'm, you know, I always think it's kind of poor form to criticize other critics. You know, it sounds like, especially if it's a person at the Times. You're like, oh, you're just unhappy. The Times didn't hire you. You know, so I've laid off of.
Yeah, and I don't think that's why I'm asking you
address
this.
It's I just want
the
listeners.
So much about it. There's been
yeah.
so much social media about it. And as I said, Margaret Sullivan, the ombudsman of the yeah. Times, has written about it.
Alessandra Stanley is really notorious for getting her facts wrong. She had a thing after the death of Walter Cronkite where I remember it because I was, you know, I had to hip shoot it for a page one story. And I know people at other, I knew the critic then at the Post, Washington Post, who was hip shooting it because we were calling the same people feverishly, you know, mm-hmm. and they'd go, oh, Zurich, I can't talk to you. I got Howie Kurtz on the other line. I'm like, forget Kurtz. He's a peasant. Talk to me. Don't talk to him. He won't give you the lead quote. I'll give you the lead quote.
It's deadline, and yeah. sometimes you make mistakes on deadline.
Well, but you know, our pieces ran, and they stood up. They had to print, I don't know, I think it was somewhere between half a dozen and like 8 or 10 corrections in this one piece. It was like, and they were unbelievable. It was like, Walter Cronkite did not wait ashore at Normandy with the 1st Battalion, as I said in my review. In fact, he came 3 days later, you know, when the press arrived, you know.
She had the date of Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination incorrect.
Unbelievable.
I mean, how do you get the date of an assassination wrong?
Thank you. And what's it say? You know, the other thing I said, so, but you
and
know
I'm
what?
A little surprised with the Times actually getting a date
That's
wrong
exactly.
like that, too.
What's the Times doing? And there yeah. was a big brouhaha after the Cronkite thing.
All of this hurts your credibility.
Totally. And people said, "Don't the Times editor copy? What about our editors? What about the copy?"
Sure, they have some responsibility, but especially on deadline,
yes.
you know, you got to your job is to get it right on the first line.
I do not know many critics who could get away with the number of errors she made without. Now, I understand the Times is in a fishbowl, unlike some other publications, but without them trying to move you out of such a high visibility.
I mean, we know this, don't we? If it's chronic, it's a problem. People don't last if you have a chronic problem with errors, factual errors in stories.
And you know what chronic is? Twice. I mean, I'm serious. That's where the business is. And you know what? God darn it, that's exactly as it should be. If people, we're asking people to pay for us. If we can't give them information that's correct, what the heck are we selling them? Why the heck should they pay a penny for us in any form? For the New York Times to do this, she has been one of the things that has really, really shredded Times credibility. And I'll tell you something else. I'll guarantee you there are people listening to us right now that if it's in the Times, it's perfect. You know, and if it's in the Sun, if the Times has this, it must be right, you know? Mm-hmm. No, if you've been reading Alessandra Stanley, a lot of your information's wrong. And
So given that background, when she leads off with a criticism of Shonda Rhimes like this, and using that phrase, a turn of a phrase, based on the title of this new series, no wonder she offended people. And it makes her a bigger target, doesn't it, because of her credibility problems.
Well, two things, and this is really important, and it's true. One, honestly, if I'm an editor and that copy comes to me and I see this, her characterizing this woman who has 3 shows in primetime on ABC, all of Thursday night's schedule is now shows that are in her production company. I mean, she's bigger than Steve Bochco ever was, or David E. Kelly, any of those people we lionized. Here she is. To characterize her almost exclusively in terms of race and then do it in terms of attitude, she's got, you know, angry, I'm like, I would be like, holy cows, and this is in your lead? What the heck are you thinking here? Or, you know what, maybe not. Maybe I take the copy to some of my colleagues who are from, who might have a different history than I do. You know what I'm saying? And we all look at it. But I would show that copy to two, three, four people I trust, and then I would come to her and say, you know, this isn't a case of, hey, let's just rewrite the lead. This is a case of, I really think you need to rethink how you're watching these shows and what your sort of cultural IQ and sensitivity is for today. I mean, do you realize how this is going to read to people? So that's also the reason I'll never be an editor, is because
but if you're a critic, and you are one,
yeah,
you want this freedom. The reason you were hired, the reason you have the job,
I'll tell you,
is because of your view of things.
Right? You know, well,
what are you being paid for? Your ability to write, perceive, write, and express yourself.
Yeah, maybe.
And to be provocative. Let's face it.
Maybe some of this provocative. Yeah, sure. But Dan, part of Dan, if you need to insult a whole race of people to be provocative, get out of the business.
Is she doing that with this? This is a criticism of Shonda Rhimes. Can I just read a little bit of it?
Sure.
So after the lead, when Shonda Rhimes writes her autobiography, it should be called How to Get Away with Being an Angry Black Woman. On Thursday, meaning this week, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Ms. Rhimes will introduce How to Get Away with Murder, yet another network series from her production company to showcase a powerful, intimidating black woman. This one is Annalise Keating, a fearsome criminal defense lawyer and law professor played by Viola Davis. And that clinches it. Ms. Rhimes, who wrought Olivia Pope on Scandal and Dr. Miranda Bailey on Grey's Anatomy, has done more to reset the image of African-American women on television than anyone since Oprah. And I'll give you this last, I don't want to read the whole thing. Ms. Rhimes has embraced the trite but persistent caricature of the angry black woman, recast it in her own image, and made it enviable. She has almost single-handedly trampled a taboo even Michelle Obama couldn't break.
Dan, you know, there's a book.
Certainly is provocative.
There's a book by, the guy's last name is Lakoff, called Metaphors We Live By. And if you, it says you really want to see inside a person's mind, not the lies they're telling you. Check, deconstruct their metaphors. Take their metaphors apart. In the language she's using, she's describing black women, intimidating, fearsome, angry. That to me is a problem.
But she's saying it's a caricature.
But you know what? Those aren't the only kinds of women of color in those shows. They're not the only kinds of African-American women in those shows. Those are the women that she sees.
I see what you're saying.
And that's the way she sees them. You know, it's like this. You know, when they say, you know, the women say this all the time. When a man is forceful, he's a good leader, or he's a great leader. When a woman's forceful, she's an awful person. She's another word for that, you know.
A tweet to us from one of our listeners, Nicole. She says the article was written as if she'd never seen the shows she was reviewing. On top of being racist, Stanley has no credibility. She incorrectly compared her to her black characters, but not to the white ones she also writes
brilliant
about.
That brilliant, that Nicole. Strange. Thank you. That's so brilliant.
Okay, so let me bring up Jada Pinkett Smith then, transition here so we can talk about other shows on fall television.
Right.
Baltimore-born, graduate of the Baltimore School for the Arts. So she has a role as a sinister gangster in Gotham, right?
Yeah.
This new series.
There's
the prequel to all the Batman stories.
Yeah,
right?
You know, now you got to understand, Gotham's sort of somewhere between comic book and mythology, you know? But I think it's going to be a successful show. It's the most talked about show. But it's like Batman. You remember Batman from when you were younger. You
sure.
remember Batman.
What are you kidding?
So, okay, so Jada Pinkett Smith.
You mean, do I remember Batman?
She plays a character in that milieu, so it's...
Yeah, yeah. And this is the days when Bruce Wayne is just
a
boy, right?
This is
prequel to Batman.
Totally. So it's larger than life, and it's kind of one-dimensional in that.
She's a crime boss, right?
She's a crime boss, but she makes it. She brings a level of wickedness, delicious wickedness to this role that I'm telling you. the British, who have a real taste for this, is she's going to be like the biggest thing in Britain
really?
When they see this character. She makes this into a truly wicked, but it's a fascinating character.
The words you used were sensual, steamy, sexual.
For the series.
All those words were in your review of this, David. You don't want to use them on the radio?
I've also reviewed her as a nurse in Hawthorne,
yes.
Where she was none of those
all
things.
Right.
So.
Can we take a comment from one of our listeners, since we invited our listeners
yes,
to join
yes,
us?
Yes, yes, yes.
Nancy is in Reisterstown calling about Gotham. She's not so hot about it. Hello, Nancy.
Hi, David.
Hi.
Hi, Nancy.
I watched
Nancy.
It last night, and I really found it so cliché. It's an accident.
Hello?
I think she said she thought it was clichéd.
Yeah, you know,
I wanted to ask her about Jada... Pinkett
yeah.
Smith's
you know
character, though.
Now, Nancy, we didn't cut Nancy off.
No, we didn't.
Something
no.
happened on
no.
her end. Okay.
You know what happened?
Yeah.
She was waiting so long to get on the air.
Gotcha. Her phone ran out.
The battery died.
The helicopter
phone.
Came yeah. and took her away. No. listen, Nancy, you are absolutely, I'm with you. I actually said in my review, it's sometimes the language, the script, you feel embarrassed to be watching
really?
It if you're an adult. Right. But there's a mythic energy here. But I think for people who are like serious dramas, like House of Cards, and they're not going to like this. This is really, and it's really geared towards younger male viewers who like these superheroes.
Oh, Nancy's back. Thank you for calling back. I guess her battery didn't die. Hi, Nancy.
No, it wasn't my battery. And don't make smart comments about me, David.
I was nice. I said nice things. I said you're right. I agree with you.
No, it reminded me of, do you remember The Cape?
Yes, yes.
It reminded me of that, but I actually like The Cape better.
Yeah, no, Nancy, honestly, I get where you're coming from, and I had some of the same reactions and tried to include that where I said at times you feel embarrassed when you hear some of the dialogue. I really do. I think if you like serious drama, this is not the one for you. Yeah.
David,
yeah.
What's new on TV that we should pay attention to?
You know, an interesting show. I'm going to have a preview of it tomorrow morning on YPR on Take on TV at 7:30 a.m., It's called Grace. Hold on.
Grace?
No. It's called Grace Point.
Grace Point.
It's called Grace Point, and it's on Fox of all places. And it airs next Thursday, a week from Thursday. And it's Anna Gunn. And who's the guy there? Let me look at it. I got to look at that.
I don't know. I don't recognize either one. I
no,
know
no,
Anna
no.
Gunn.
He's a very good British actor. He's terrific. Did
you hear that,
That's
folks?
Grace Point.
That was very funny. David just opened the publicity folder for Grace Point, and it started making it sound like seagulls.
Seagulls. That's exactly what it's David Tennant. It's David Tennant, Doctor Who. He's a really great actor. This is a great thing. It's built on a British model, only 10 episodes, a murder mystery in a beach town. A child dies. Great show. Starts a week from Thursday, next Thursday. That's October 2nd, on Fox, of all places.
As is Gotham, right?
Yes, and one of the Gotham is one of the creators of it is Anya Epstein, who's an old-time favorite of Baltimore. She wrote on The Homicide, and she also did In Treatment on HBO, which is a very adult drama. Yes,
I enjoyed that.
Her and Dan Futterman, who wrote on that show, are writing on this. So that's my sleeper pick, folks. Grace Point. Yes, next Thursday on Fox.
Starting a week from tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm gonna have a review also tomorrow online, Dan. Of How to Get Away with Murder, the Shonda Rhimes thing we discussed. So you can see
David.
That, too. It's ENTV.
Okay. Thank you very much, David. Thanks for being here. David Zerwick joins us on the third Wednesday of every month.
Yeah, you
is
made
that what
me
this
crazy.
Is already?
Yeah, it's the third Wednesday.
It's usually at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah, but you made me crazy. I was going to come in and be nice, you know? And
you know,
it's your fault.
I set you off a little.
That's
what I'm here for, David. thanks for being here, David. And thanks for everybody for tuning in. You can catch David's column, of course, at BaltimoreSun.com and his blog, Z, on TV. You can read the review that I referred to there of Gotham. And what do you have today? What's up today?
Today I'm going to take on that Gawker thing where they say the New York Times could not have printed it. The
video from Ray Rice?
Yeah, I'm going to take on the video of Ray Rice and why mainstream media is trying to trash TMZ's work.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have to still write it when I get in the office. Okay.
We gave you a little practice here.
Tomorrow morning, How to Get Away with Murder. Okay.
Thank you, David. And thanks, everyone. That's our first hour. Please stick around for the second hour. It's going to be good. Wednesday's lunch is provided by Apples and Oranges Fresh Market, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Its catering menu includes deli and sandwich platters, fruit and cheese plates, and desserts. Apples and Oranges Fresh Market, open daily at 1900 North Broadway and online at applesandorangesmarket.com.